Good morning. Today, the Robinson Bianchino courtroom at the Washburn University School of Law has been transformed into a federal courthouse. We are grateful to Dean Romig and the staff of the law school and the Center for Law and Government for your thoughtful and careful planning and making the arrangements for our visit. We welcome the students and faculty, members of the bar, men and women of the armed forces, and the public to these proceedings. We shall now proceed to the oral argument in the United States against McComber. We shall hear first from counsel for the appellant, then for counsel for the amicus, and then counsel for the government. Counsel for the appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Efron, honorable judges of the court. I am Captain Tiandra Sorrell, and along with Captain Lance Wood, represent the appellant in this case, Airman First Class Edward McComber. The key question before this court is, did the magistrate have probable cause to issue a search warrant for Airman McComber's dorm room? No, he did not. There are no facts connecting his dorm room to evidence of possession of child pornography. Furthermore, OSI's failure to provide the military magistrate with the 18 April 2003 date of which Airman McComber last accessed child pornography and information of whether he had a computer in his dorm room was a reckless disregard for the truth.
Didn't Operation Falcon yield that dorm address?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Operation Falcon yielded credit card information assigned to Airman McComber.
Which yielded the dorm address? It appears in a record somewhere they gave him the dorm address, albeit after a lapse of time.
Specify whether you're talking about the internet thing 14 months ago, or which is Falcon?
Operation, the internet sting from which the Immigration and Customs agents gathered information that linked back to Airman McComber and his credit card information, and through an investigation of the ICE agents, traced that information to him.
And when did the address come into play? That came into play later with the questionnaire in the ordering of the videos, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Does it appear from the record that he lived or did not, where he lived in April of 03?
No, Your Honor.
The record is silent on that?
The record is silent on where his physical location was in April of 03.
Well, I'm not talking about whether he's TDY. I'm talking about where he resided in April of 03.
Yes, Your Honor, the record is silent. I believe the information that was obtained was an index that had Airman McComber's name and his credit card information.
Isn't it at least a fair inference that he had a computer if he's purchasing internet porn and using a credit card to do so? How else would he view that?
Your Honor, there are a number of computers that he could have used depending on his physical whereabouts in April of 03, of which the record
does
not
reveal. But it's a fair inference that he had access to a computer. Your main argument is it's not clear where that computer is.
That's correct, Your Honor. During the motion hearing at trial, the party stipulated,
for purposes of probable cause, as opposed to proving guilt or innocence at trial, why is it essential that the magistrate rule out other locations? That is, why can't the magistrate fairly infer that a person who is making internet purchases has a computer in their home?
Well, in Airman McComber's case, Your Honor, as just indicated, it wasn't known where this computer was, where he accessed the information. In some of the case law, that link that the computer was in the home gave rise to this is one of the likely locations where they're going to maintain additional materials.
In the year 2000 plus, why isn't it a fair inference that a person who makes internet purchases has a computer in their home? It may not be sufficient to prove beyond reasonable doubt that a person is guilty of using a computer in their home, but for purposes of the probable cause test, why isn't that sufficient?
The magistrate was not provided any information on the whereabouts of the computer. If I'm understanding your question correctly.
My question is, why couldn't he infer that in the 21st century, a person who makes internet purchases has a computer in their home, given common understanding and knowledge about the proliferation of computers in our society?
Well, I suppose, Your Honor, that could be if you're dealing with a person that lived off base in a quarter in his home or somewhere that he could set up any way he wanted. But Aaron McComber lived in a dorm room, and I don't think we can infer that dorm residents typically have computers, because computer access is made available to people that live in the dorms and other locations.
Counsel, which way does that cut? Are you suggesting that it's equally likely that an airman residing on base would use a computer in the base library or some other public government computer to access internet pornography?
Well, Your Honor, it has happened.
I didn't ask you whether it happened. I'm asking you what's the rational inference, which I think is also what the Chief Judge is asking. He has a dorm room. He has access to a computer, obviously, because he went into the internet and asked for this stuff. What is the most reasonable inference? Is it not that the computers where he resides, particularly given the profiling material that says that these folks tend to have the stuff around them, they keep it close by them, and they keep it for long periods?
Yes, Your Honor. However, there's only information that he accessed. There's no evidence that he received materials, that he downloaded any materials, that he paid for additional materials from this website. The only information is that he accessed and whether that access was, hey, pay us some money and you can come see what we have. We don't know if it's pay us some more money and you can download, you can receive, you can take with you.
Well, didn't he in fact respond to a solicitation, pay money and receive something?
Yes, Your Honor, but that was by mail, which cuts against him. If he has all this internet access in his room, why is he ordering through the mail? Why not pay under the subscription for these materials?
Counsel, is it clear from the record whether or not appellant was a subscriber or whether he merely accessed the site?
Well, in the affidavit, it talks about access to the site. And I believe the stipulation of fact says that he was named as a website subscriber.
Yeah, but counsel, that brings up another issue. What we're concerned with is what the magistrate knew, the information that was before the magistrate. And the primary evidence that we have in this case is the affidavit and the stipulation of fact. And yet the stipulation of fact is much more detailed than the affidavit is, and appears to be more detailed than the testimony of the agent. Are you satisfied that everything in the affidavit was before the magistrate?
Everything in the affidavit was before the magistrate, but not necessarily the facts as indicated in the stipulation of fact being before the magistrate.
So was the stipulation created after, for purposes of trial, was it created after the search?
Yes, Your Honor.
But, okay, taking away the post office incident, there is a lot of detail in the stipulation of fact as to what the agent did and what happened that doesn't appear in the affidavit. What is your position as to that extra information? I mean, obviously, your client has agreed to that stipulation, and you know that was what the lower court relied upon. But it's unclear to me how much of that information was actually known to the magistrate.
Well, and Your Honor, I think it's unclear. It is unclear. The affidavit talks about what was presented and the agent's experience, and then the limited facts of which they were seeking probable cause, whereas the stipulation only speaks of a discussion with the magistrate, and we don't know what that discussion consisted of.
I think the question is a little bit different, counsel, which is there's a lot of information in the stipulation of fact with respect to the internet access or the subscriber, with respect to this, that, and the other thing that's not in the agent's affidavit. And I think what Judge Urban's question is whether or not you have a position as to whether that information that's in the stipulation of fact, that's not in the affidavit was nonetheless presented to the magistrate, or whether you know, or if you don't know.
No, I don't know that that information was presented to the magistrate. From the record, it's clear that the only information the magistrate received was the affidavit and some discussion. And
well, how should we treat that? Obviously, your client entered into the stipulation of fact. That places us in an awkward position if you are now saying that you don't know if that was presented to the magistrate.
Your Honor, when this court looks at what information was presented to the magistrate, the only thing that is clear is what is in the affidavit.
Well, look at paragraph 14 of the stipulation, if you would. And that seems to be an agreement between the parties as to what the magistrate had before him. Is that a fair representation of what you believe was before the magistrate?
If you're talking, he based his probable cause finding mainly on information linking the accused to a pay for child pornography website, together with information submitted by the accused indicating a sexual interest in children.
Right, and I'm trying to get you to use that to answer the question that my colleagues have asked you, or supplement your answer, if you wish.
Yes, Your Honor. Along with the affidavit, it is, according to paragraph 14, he was provided that additional information, but it also talks about in the affidavit, or at least in the record, that during that discussion, he was made aware of this sting that was about to happen, which would include, as in paragraph 14, the information that was submitted prior to the sting, the sexual interest in the materials that he was seeking at the time.
Counsel.
Does the record reflect whether or not the website that had been accessed had any lawful purpose as opposed to simply unlawful purposes?
There is some suggestion that in addition to, it says primarily for child pornographic materials, but there is some suggestion that there was additional materials in lustgallery.com.
Is there any evidence in the record or that was presented to the magistrate as to whether or not anything from the website had been downloaded by appellant?
No, Your Honor.
Is there any evidence in the record as to whether or not evidence was presented to the magistrate that information accessed at the website would necessarily be downloaded in some format that would be recoverable from the hard drive?
No, Your Honor. And in fact, the magistrate was not told, as I stated earlier, whether he had downloaded anything or had a computer in his room at all.
So why isn't your best argument involving the fact that, well, there may have been evidence with respect to the appellant being interested in child pornography 14 months later, that the information with respect to the location in his room was stale?
Well, it was stale, and I think that coincides with the argument that there was no relationship between his dorm room and evidence of child pornography.
You make a nexus, profile nexus argument, dorm nexus argument, and staleness argument. In which do you think is your strongest argument?
Out of the three? Dorm nexus.
Or you can pick another one, but those seem to be your three primary arguments.
Out of dorm nexus, stale.
And you have the issue with whether the affidavit linked him as fitting within a pedophile, child porn profile. And then you have the issue of the staleness of the information linking him to child porn.
And then the lack of a nexus between his dorm room and any evidence.
Right.
And which
do you think is your strongest argument? What do you hope we focus on?
Well, I think that the staleness and the nexus, the dorm nexus argument, go hand in hand. I think together those are the strongest arguments.
In staleness terms, is it one size fits all for staleness? Or is staleness viewed differently by courts in the context of child pornography?
It's viewed differently, Your Honor, and because of the nature of the material and depending upon how the particular appellant received that information.
It's a longer window. And why doesn't the questionnaire and the test letter, which suggests a continuing interest in child porn, remove the staleness argument for you?
Well, for one, we're talking about mail order items versus internet items. And in the mail order items, although the interest is still there, he has actually received something. 14 months earlier, there's no indication that he received anything. So there's no indication, that information is not only stale, there's nothing that gives rise that there are going to be additional materials to be found in his dorm room.
But it shows continuing interest, and then this gets back to the profile, the theory, at least, that some courts have held with staleness and porn, is that if you fit the profile, you're likely to have the stuff lying around still.
Yes, Your Honor, but in most of those cases, there's something else to link it up to. There's some hard fact. There's something tangible. Like in Gallo, there was 262 images that there was evidence that he downloaded. That was stuff that they expected to find. Here, there's no stuff. There's access, but there's nothing downloaded. It's 14 months ago, but there's no stuff. There isn't, stuff doesn't arrive until he receives the items in the mail.
Well, if we were looking, if this were something beyond probable cause, you might have a point. But I think what Judge Baker's saying is that he expressed an interest at one point. By the way, didn't your client stipulate to the fact that they got his dorm address out of Operation Falcon? Paragraph 2, my earlier question. As a result of Operation Falcon, Special Agent Novleski received a site index.
Yes, Your Honor, I apologize.
He stipulated the fact that, which means presumably he was residing in the same dorm when he accessed the website in 03. He at least stipulated to that.
That he lived in that dorm.
That he lived in that dorm.
But whether or not that was the physical access point.
Well, that's not my, that wasn't my question. My question was whether he lived in that dorm in April 03, and it appears he stipulated that he did. Or at least that he stipulated that the investigation yielded that address.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. Okay.
Counsel, though, your time has expired. Judge Erdman's indicated that he has a question. You can take the time to answer that, and then I'll have a question for you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, let's move beyond the probable cause issue right now. And given the fact that your client was picked up and arrested with this videotape on him at the post office, why would not this evidence have been inevitably discovered? Why would not that have triggered a search of the dorm room?
It may have, Your Honor, but at that point, there was the authorities with that information. That is the time to seek search authority. There was nothing, so they had him in custody, so there was nothing so exigent, so time is of the essence to immediately go and search his dorm room. That information should have been presented to the search authority to determine whether or not that gave rise to his determination of probable cause.
Putting aside all of the initial efforts and the affidavit and everything, once they arrested him with that child pornography material on him, would it not have been logical for them to then ask for a search warrant of his room?
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, the subject of use of internet subscriptions to pornography sites as a basis for probable cause isn't a novel proposition. In 2006, the Ninth Circuit in the United States against Gordy said, it neither strange logic nor defies common sense to conclude, based on the totality of the circumstances, that someone who paid for access for 2 months to a website that actually purveyed child pornography probably had viewed or downloaded such images onto his computer. In the Second Circuit, in United States against Martin, which is a 2005 case, said that it's common sense that an individual that joined such a site would more than likely possess and download such material. Why can't we draw the same inferences in this case that the Ninth Circuit and the Second Circuit drew in those cases? And that is, someone who's a subscriber probably downloaded. I understand the staleness argument, but putting aside the staleness argument, why is that not a reasonable inference?
Well, Your Honor, the response for that is looking at the totality of the circumstances and with some other additional fact, like he has a computer and we know where he accessed it, or some additional information to link that with. Anyone who...
Were those facts present in either the Gordy or the Martin cases decided by the Ninth Circuit or the Second Circuit?
And, Your Honor, I apologize. That fact escapes me.
That's fine. We can review those then.
There are no further questions.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You'll have an opportunity during rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll now hear for counsel for Amicus. Welcome to the court.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, for the amicus curiae from Washburn University School of Law, my name is Mark Coulter. The military magistrate erred in denying Airman McComber's motion to suppress because the warrant affidavit lacked probable cause on multiple points. Because of the natures of these failures, a good faith exception does not apply. For the purpose of today's discussion, I will be focusing on two related issues where the affidavit fails: the bare bones generalized nature of the affidavit, which leads to a failure to establish a nexus between the language of the affidavit and Airman McComber, which is not cured by any further expert experience or by a thorough investigation. For the first point where the affidavit was too generalized, I'd like to direct the court's attention to a case from the Ninth Circuit, U.S. v. Weber, from 1990. It's a very, very similar case, based on many of the same style of facts. It was a child pornography case, and in Weber, the court looked at four different facts that were contained in the affidavit and how they related then to the person, to Weber in that case. First off, I'd like to point out a few facts. 2 years prior, Weber had been sent child pornography advertisements. He never claimed them. No proof was ever given that Weber requested the material. And so a sting operation, as in this case, was set up. He answered the government-generated advertisement for child pornography, and he in fact ordered a few.
That you have make a couple arguments. Are you focusing on the dorm room nexus here, or are you focusing on the linking him to the pedophile profile?
Well, Your Honor,
how are you using Weber? Because Weber's primarily about nexus to the place to be searched.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Your Honor.
Weber seems to be oriented towards nexus of the to the place to be searched.
It is, Your Honor, but it also focuses on the bare bones nature of the affidavit and the and a.
Can I ask you a question about nexus, the profile issue? That's one of your arguments, that the affidavit provided a generalized child pornography profile and did not link the appellant to that profile. Is that your argument?
That is one of the arguments, yes, okay. Your Honor.
Now, why doesn't the information in the affidavit indicating that this person filled out a test questionnaire or a test letter and a questionnaire expressing interest in child pornography, why doesn't that make the link between the general profile and this particular appellant?
Well, Your Honor, that's a very good point, and Weber specifically addresses that. In that case, the investigating officer gave a very similar affidavit, but he did not connect as to how that person how that person fit that profile. In this case,
interested in this case than Weber, frankly.
No, I understand. In this case, there was a 14-month separation between the Access to Lust Gallery, which there are also.
That's a staleness issue, though. Focus on the profile issue.
It is on one hand, it is a staleness information, Your Honor, but on
so
the
he no
other,
longer fits the profile because.
No, it fits the profile.
Go ahead.
It does not fit the profile because in Weber they specifically stated one incident a certain amount of time before.
But here we have a guy filling out a test letter and a questionnaire saying, I'm interested in child porn.
Yes.
Why doesn't that put him squarely within the profile of a child porn guy?
Because according to Weber, more foundation needs to be laid by the person.
Well, in Weber, if I understand your explanation of the case, he got a solicitation sometime before, did nothing with it. Was that what you said?
He had received some solicitation in the past. Based on that solicitation, they ordered a sting operation.
Well, he had received it and done nothing with it. Isn't that what you stated the facts were?
He had never claimed the advertisement.
Okay, here you have him subscribing to Lust Gallery, a child pornography service, 14 months in advance, from his dorm room. He stipulated to that. So then that isn't that make it totally different from Weber? He initiated this. He subscribed to this service. He initiated the contact with Lust Gallery, which yielded to the investigators his address, which set in motion the sting operation. Doesn't that take it completely out of Weber?
No, it doesn't, but you have to look at the internet access.
Weber is an internet case, right?
No, it is not.
It's a mail case.
It is a mail case. And the internet cases that I would compare this situation and Weber to are United States v. Gallo, where there was a large amount of corroborating evidence. If I remember the facts correctly, Gallo in that case had access. There was the investigation yielded results that he had accessed the child pornography from his work computer. They were then able to investigate that computer to determine that he had downloaded onto a portable drive, so that he would likely take it to another computer. They investigated as to whether or not he had internet access at his house. They investigated, in fact, whether or not he had a computer. And I think this is very important, specifically in light of Hay and Lacey. U.S. v. Hay is a Ninth Circuit 2000 case where they traced child pornography to a specific computer located on the University of Washington campus, and through that they were able to connect it to the student accessing that computer. In U.S. v. Lacey, it's a Ninth Circuit 1997 decision, they used phone records to connect a bulletin board site in Denmark to the person who downloaded child pornography pictures from there. In all of these cases, in Gallo, Hay, and Lacey, there is a definite electronic trail that is noticeably
that
absent.
That goes to site to be searched nexus.
Yes,
you would agree.
And I do agree, and they all come into play because the warrant did not contain enough information for probable cause, and it's a combination of the bare bones affidavit under
what's the standard for probable cause?
For probable cause for this case, I believe it's U.S. Bethea abuse.
Well,
enunciate
the standard.
Okay, it's an abuse of discretion and
not standard of review.
Okay.
What is the standard? Isn't it simply it's more likely than not that the stuff is there? And that the warrant states with, you know, the Constitution says that the warrant has to state with particularity the things to be, the place to be searched and the things to be seized. Certainly this did that. It said you're going to search this dorm room and this car and you're going to seize child pornography.
Yes, Your Honor. However, again, going back to Weber, it was a very specific, the court was very specific in their findings there that one incident based on information, there was an information in the past which led to a sting operation. Here, information in the past led to a sting operation.
Information in the past of a wholly different nature initiated by the appellant.
There's no facts one way or the other in Weber.
I'm not talking about Weber, I'm talking about this case. In this case, was there not action in the past initiated by the appellant to a known child pornography site?
Yes, there was, but in order for them to be able to use that effectively, a thorough investigation needed to be made. They needed to connect that access of 14 months prior. All they knew that there was access. They didn't know where it was from, and
the appellant stipulated to it.
Correct, but that was not in the warrant. That was not contained in the affidavit.
Can I ask you about the affidavit?
Yes.
Your concern is that it's bare bones and so on. Is there anything in the do you have it before you, by the way?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
Is there anything in it that you'd like to draw our attention to which you think illustrates your bare bones point?
Yes, Your Honor.
So when we're deliberating, what do you hope we're looking at in the affidavit?
Under Section 2 of Background, Number 5 specifically, it is the profile, it is the affiant and these experts who aren't named, or at least their expertise is not explained, have found through prior investigations, etc. It lists out the generic profile of child pornographers and persons with a sexual attraction to children. They never state why McComber fits that profile, and under U.S. v. Weber, one
okay,
order through a government sting operation.
I just want to make sure I get your full list so you don't miss the opportunity to convey it.
Thank you, Your Honor. That entire section seems to be cut and paste.
You're still in paragraph 5 there?
Yes.
Okay.
Paragraph 5 in its entirety is a generic, and I see my time is wrapping up, is a generic.
You can take the time to answer statement. Judge Baker's question.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Under Weber, it consists of the rambling boilerplate recitations.
No, I understand your argument, but what else? This is your chance to give us the menu of bare bonesness in the affidavit. Anything else you'd like to draw our attention to?
Yes, Your Honor. If number 5 is not connected to Airman McComber, and it is not, it is never explained as to how he is, and it is never explained to the magistrate. If number 5 is not connected to Airman McComber, it should be stripped out under the standard. And
any
then,
other paragraphs?
No, that's Your Honor, that is the focus.
You've answered my question. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And I see my time is up. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Captain Coretta Gray, and I, along with Major Jeremy Weber, represent the United States in this matter. The military judge did not err in denying appellant's motion to suppress the evidence of child pornography from his dorm room. The military magistrate had probable cause to issue the search warrant because of 4 things. 1, the appellant subscribed to a known child porn website. 2, he expressed a continuing interest in teen and preteen sex. 3, he ordered actual child pornography videos to his dorm room address. And 4, that this ties up with the profile information given by the agent.
By the way, does the record,
yes,
say your 4, I don't want to.
Just the profile information given by the agent and the experienced agents who he was working with, that child pornography is most often kept in an accessible, secure location like a personal bedroom.
The videos, does the record reflect whether CD discs or VHS, or?
It does not, Your Honor. Now, Your Honor.
Do you think that you need all 4 of those things?
I actually do not, Your Honor.
Okay, so in the government's view, if what we had here was a response to the solicitation by the undercover agent and an ordering of the videos, that would be enough?
I think, in addition, the first prong, which is the subscription to the website, I think you need those 3.
The subscription to the website is critical?
I do, Your Honor. I think you need those 3, and I think the profile information from the investigators only helps to supplement the information that's already presented. But even if you didn't have that nexus, which has been argued about it as making as putting together this not being stale, that knowing that this appellant has access to a computer and that he has access that computer to download child pornography.
Well, what evidence is there that he downloaded child pornography on the record?
Well, the specific quote in the stipulation of fact is that he accessed the website. But what is known is that he's a website subscriber.
Does the record reflect for how long he was a subscriber?
It is not clear. What is clear is that in March of 2003, the ICE agents took down this website, lustgallery.com, and that when they did that, in March of 2004, they took down the website.
Would you please describe for us what it means to take down the website?
Well, in this case, according to the stipulation of fact, that meant that they shut it down. They were able to look at the subscription list and determine who had subscribed, and that's where they got the credit card information for Airman McComber that did, as Judge Stuckey pointed out, listed his information, including his address at Minot Air Force Base in dorm 211, which was the address that was the subject of this search authorization.
And when it was taken down in March 2004, the last access, or the only access that we know of from the record by appellant was in April of 2003.
That's correct,
Your Honor. Earlier.
That's correct, Your Honor. But
so does that help you or hurt you in terms of your argument that he was a collector as defined by the agent in the affidavit?
Well, I think it's clear, and maybe I can speak maybe for the appellant in this case, that if the government had gone in immediately in April of 2003 to certain and executed a search authorization, if they had known then in April 2003, that we wouldn't have a problem here. That their issue is the time that lapsed. But the issue there is that even with this time going by, we then got more information to let us know that this appellant was still interested in children.
Does it help you or hurt you that when appellant was apprehended, that he was trying to return the videos?
Well, I think that's arguable in this case, Your Honor, about whether he was, about what he was doing with the videos.
The record is clear that he sat in his car and then went back to the post office with the videos, right?
Right, but what he was going to do with them when he got in there, we don't really know. I think that it seems like it could be properly inferred from the record that had not it been for the flash from the camera of the OSI agents, that this appellant would have been continuing on to his vehicle.
What evidence is it that the appellant saw the flash from the OSI agents? I understand that that's the inference you would like to draw, but what evidence is it that the appellant saw that?
Well, I think one thing that you could look at is the actual photograph that was attached to the stipulation of fact, and it's at the joint appendix at page 78. The appellant in that photograph is looking directly into the camera. And then we have the agents testifying that this flash went off, that the appellant went to his car, sat in his car, and then got back out and went back into the post office. So it is an inference. There's nothing direct in the stipulation of fact that says he saw the flash go off, but I think it's a fair inference from the information that we have on the record.
Does the record reflect whether the appellant was stationed at this location throughout this time period?
Yes, Your Honor. In the stipulation of fact, the only time that he left was for a TDY to Guam, and then that's
how long was that TDY?
That was a 6-month TDY. A 4-month TDY.
4-month TDY. Otherwise, the record reflects that he's a resident of Dorm room 211,
and that address came up repeatedly in
paragraph 19 of the affidavit.
Yes, Your Honor.
It says the affiant believes McComber has used his computer system to facilitate possession distribution of child pornography. What was presented to the magistrate that documents his computer, that he has a computer, and that he's used it to facilitate the possession and distribution of child pornography?
Well, what was given to the magistrate was that he was a website subscriber to lustgallery.com.
That's it. Is there anything else?
That's it, Your Honor.
So based on that, the affiant stated to the magistrate that A, he had a computer and used it on an ongoing basis?
Well, based on that, the idea of being a subscriber means that you're putting your credit card information down so that you can look at this information whenever you want to. The specific proof that they had was that he accessed it in April of 2003. But I think it is a fair inference that, and again, this is a totality of the circumstances with the evidence being looked at in favor of the prevailing party, which was the government in this case.
I'm just making sure that I understand the facts that support paragraph 19's assertion that he has a computer and used it, and that it all goes back to that one website.
I believe it does, Your Honor. It goes back to that website, the idea that it is likely that a person would have downloaded information from that we know he accessed the website as a subscriber, and that he has to have access to a computer in order to access the website.
Did the agent at any time state whether he knew there was a computer in that room or not?
No, Your Honor.
Why didn't paragraph 19 leave the magistrate with the clear understanding that the agent believed there was a computer in that room?
I'm sorry, your question was why didn't it?
Right. Wouldn't that leave the normal reader with the belief that this agent knew, in fact, there was a computer in the room?
Well, based on the way that the affidavit was written, it was that videos and computers are places, are things that would likely be in a person's room where child pornography might be found. And so,
Or nearby locations.
Where does it refer to computers? It talks about images.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Talks about images.
Well,
where does the agent say that a profile would demonstrate that there will be a computer in this person's room? Where in the affidavit do you find that?
He doesn't say that the profile will demonstrate that there will be a computer.
It doesn't say that, does
it? It does not.
So why isn't the magistrate misled by paragraph 19?
Well, because it does say, the affidavit does say that it's likely that materials such as photographs will be kept, recordings, videos, films, and these are things that can be kept on a computer.
Well, they can be kept on a computer, but they can be kept in many other places as well. And at what point does the agent provide any basis for the statement in 19 that there's going to be a computer in this room? We've talked about inferences that today we expect people to have computers in rooms. Where does this agent tell the magistrate, I'm asking you to draw an inference? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know there's a computer in this room. Where does the agent say that? Where is he being candid with this magistrate?
Well, he doesn't say those words, Your Honor, but I think that he is that it is reasonable to believe that if a person is a website subscriber, that they've got a computer or that they're using a computer to access that website. And that if you're going to search their room after they're ordering videotapes and expressing a continuing interest in children, that the likelihood when their address goes to this room that they're using to participate as a website subscriber, the likelihood that that pornography is going to be in that room is very great.
I understand that argument. I don't see any of those words in the affidavit.
I would agree that those words are not delineated that clearly in the affidavit.
How about Merkley? Where?
Well, I think what you get that the magistrate can hang his hat on is that, one, the information is on page 3 in paragraphs 6, 7, 8, and 9 about this appellant subscribing to and visiting the child pornography website. This appellant responding to the test letter after he received it, responding to the questionnaire and expressing his continuing interest in children, and then purchasing the tapes. So I think that's all in there.
Can I just be clear? My question to you was, what supported paragraph 19? And I believe your answer was the website access.
Right.
Full stop, or are you supplementing your answer?
I would supplement my answer, Your Honor, with those additional things that I'm talking about that are on page 3 of the affidavit, page 66 of our joint appendix, because it's all of those things together that gave the magistrate the probable cause to issue the search authorization. And that's what it says in the stipulation of fact.
Why do those things demonstrate he has a computer?
Well, it's that it makes reasonable common sense to believe that he has a computer, and that's part of the standard. It's a practical common sense decision, given all of the circumstances in the affidavit, that there's a fair probability you're going to find this contraband in this place.
I mean, counsel, it'd be one thing if the agent had told the magistrate straight up, this individual accessed the website a single time, you know, over a year ago, and we don't know whether there's a computer in the room, and we can't say for sure that he was here, that he was in Guam, but we think it's a reasonable inference that it happened in his room because of X, Y, and Z, and we think that there's a reasonable probability that he has a computer because of 1, 2, and 3. And we think that even though he only accessed it once, there's a reasonable probability that he, you know, had other information in his room and that it's still there whether he tried to get rid of it or not. But none of those things were presented to the magistrate.
Well, I think what you have is all of those pieces. You have all of those pieces with the website, the test letter, the information, the questionnaire, and the ordering of the tapes, and the fact that when you put it all together with this profile information, that it's likely that it's going to be in the room because these folks keep this information.
So let me ask you a question. If an individual were to respond to the question, to only respond to the questionnaire, for example, do you think that would provide sufficient probable cause to search their home, their car, any place that they had ever been?
Not just the questionnaire expressing interest.
What about simply the subscription or the single accessing of the website from without any tying to a particular location? So, for example, in the Second Circuit case or in the other cases that were discussed earlier, there was usually some manner in which they tied the access to the location where the person resided. Mm-hmm. But is just the access enough?
Well, I think it ties it to the location by the credit card information that lists his address as being this dorm room at Minot Air Force Base. So when he gives that information to, and that's what's current when he's accessing this website and is subscribing to this website, I think it's very reasonable to believe that that's where he would be looking at it from, particularly when In this case, we have all the additional information that that dorm room 211 is the address that he's using. It's the return address. It's the address on the money order.
No, it's his billing address.
Well, it's the place that he lives as well, because when he receives that information, that mail, he returns it and says, send it back to me at dorm room 211. So that address is linking you to that room, and that's his personal bedroom. That's his closed, personal, accessible space that's safe, that the profile information talks about.
Would, if, assuming arguendo, that the magistrate were misled, would that defeat the good faith exception in this case?
It would not, Your Honor.
How so?
Well, one, we have to keep in mind that there is a preference for warrants. And this case, this magistrate, it was reasonable for him to believe that the evidence would be found where they were looking for it for. They had the legal office sign off on this affidavit. They looked at it, the Captain Lee, the Chief Military Justice Officer. They had the other members of the detachment of OSI looked at it and signed off on it.
Sorry, what does that mean?
Well,
are they neutral and detached magistrates?
Well, no, but it's something where when you're talking about the colonel, the commander who now has to execute this, whether he had enough information to make him believe that this affidavit gave him a substantial basis to have this search executed.
So if enough lawyers look at it, it must be okay?
Well, in the magistrate's mind, whether he's feeling comfortable that he's got a reasonable basis here, if he's got his legal officer and his law enforcement people saying, we've looked at it and we're signing off on it, that just is another piece to add to the facts that he already has on the face of the affidavit.
Is that your best argument?
Well, in this case, I would say, one, that the appellant hasn't brought any information forth that would defeat the four conditions of the good faith exception. Was he so misled by information in the affidavit that the affiant knew was false or would have known was false except for a reckless disregard of the truth? There's just not evidence that supports that here. A reckless disregard for the truth by the affiant, he put all those four pieces of information in there and gave it to the magistrate to consider. Certainly no evidence that the magistrate wholly abandoned his judicial role or that the officer relied on a warrant based on an affidavit that was so...
Does the record reflect whether the magistrate asked questions?
The stipulation of fact does reflect that the magistrate asked questions, Your Honor. And that's when he actually had them add some additional information into the affidavit. That's when Special Agent White let him know that the Chief of Justice had reviewed the affidavit. And that's when, I think paragraph 9 of the stipulation of fact, where they talk about how they set up this delivery and what steps they went through, then Colonel Harold in paragraph 10 read the affidavit twice, discussed the contents, and got the extra information from Special Agent White. Lieutenant Colonel Harold asked if Special Agent White had the JAG consulted on the affidavit and was assured that that had been done. So yes, he was asking questions.
Counsel, where in the stipulation or in the argument presented by the prosecution at trial or in any statements made at trial did the government ask the magistrate to draw the inference that there was a computer in the appellant's room? I understand the arguments that are being made now about the inferences, mm-hmm. but where at trial was there something put in the record showing that the inference was asked for the magistrate to draw that there was a computer in the room?
I don't think there's anything else other than just the information presented that he was a subscriber to the website. There's nothing else that I'm aware of.
The prosecution couldn't make that argument before the magistrate and couldn't make the argument at trial. Why should we now be making an argument that should have been made to the magistrate at the time that the warrant was applied for?
Well, I don't think that it's that they couldn't make the argument. I think it's that they put all the facts in the affidavit and that it's reasonable to believe that the magistrate made that inference. If you've got the website,
so we have to infer we have to infer what the magistrate really meant by what we now know.
No, Your Honor, you have to look at those prongs of information and decide if that's a reasonable basis to believe you would find child pornography in this room on this computer. And it is. I mean, it just the combination of being a website subscriber and the continuing interest in the children in just the weeks leading up to this search warrant being executed, it says that he has access to a computer, that he's using the computer for child pornography, and that he's still interested in child pornography. Therefore, it makes complete sense that he would have it in his room, especially when you know that child pornographers maintain this information in an easily accessible and close location like a bedroom.
I mean, the problem, counsel, is that the inference that case law allows us to make that there is going to be child pornography in a location, in a particular location, if the person is a collector, is a pretty tenuous inference already in terms of the Fourth Amendment. All right, and now we have a case where we don't even know anywhere from the record that there was a computer in this particular location. I mean, do you see why that is a little bit problematic? I mean, the Fourth Amendment is supposed to mean something, isn't it?
Well, yes, Your Honor. I just think that I don't think that it is a far jump to make a common sense interpretation of if you're subscribing to a website that you have a computer, that you have a computer to access that.
You've been talking about the subscribing to the website, leaving out the other part that the magistrate didn't know, which is that there was that all the record reflects is a single access of the website over a year before the time that he was approached for a search warrant.
Right, but the importance of it is that he's been on a computer to access child pornography. So no matter if it was 14 months ago or 6 months ago or 10 months ago, like some of the other cases talked about, it gives us why the computer would be a place that child pornography could be kept or would be kept. And then that's in combination with the continuing interest and the profile information that suggests that it makes perfect sense that it would be on there when you go look for it in his room. There are no other questions from the panel? In that case, the government asks that you affirm the lower court, the Air Force Court's opinion, and affirm the findings and sentence in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Chief Judge Efron, honorable members of the court, I just wanted to follow up and point out just a few things. With regard to what is reasonable, and it's not reasonable to believe that 14-month-old information is going to be found in this appellant's dorm room. As was previously pointed out, the lack of knowledge of a computer or misleading whether there's a computer, those two things coupled together, it's not reasonable to conclude you're going to find this information in Airman McComber's dorm room. When we talk about a practical common sense decision from the mission support group commander, which is what Lieutenant Colonel Harold was, and he has knowledge that Airman McComber is living in the dorms, but the information in the affidavit provided talks about a secure location. Now, a practical common sense measure from the deputy group commander in looking at whether or not this is a secure location, whether or not he has a roommate, a dorm room which is subject to search and inspections and the like. When you add that information as common sense, coupled with the lack of knowledge of a computer, and if he had the information that this was 14 months ago, that would dictate that it's not reasonable to find this type of information in his dorm room. Lastly, I'd just like to touch upon the good faith exception and its inapplicability to Airman McComber. When looking at what is missing and or misleading in the affidavit, I think that you can point to a reckless disregarding the truth on the part of the agents. They should have provided the date to the magistrate because that was the information they received from the ICE agents. And to input or try to suggest that Airman McComber had a computer when they didn't have knowledge. It would have been simple to, as one case has done prior to this, I think it's a Second Circuit case, undercover call. I'm doing a survey on internet access. Do you own a computer? And it would have been simple to find out that information, and it would have taken 5 minutes, something that isn't clear that happened here. Lastly, I'd like to note when executing this warrant, and the record does reveal who was involved, and although Agent White, the affiant, at trial said he came in on the tail end, he does indicate who did execute the warrant, which is the OSI detachment commander, Mr. Webb, who was also involved in drafting the affidavit. The stipulation of fact says that Agent White showed the affidavit to his commander, Mr. Webb. Mr. Webb made some suggestions, and Agent White made those changes. The OSI commander, one of the ones executing the warrant, was well aware of what was in the search authority and what was not there. And I just asked the court to look at that information when determining whether or not the good faith exception applies. If there are no further questions, the appellant requests that this court set aside specification 2 of the charge and set aside the sentence. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. And we thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. We thank counsel for the amicus and all who participated in the amicus brief for assisting the court with your presentation today. After the clerk, the case is now submitted and we'll take it under advisement. After the clerk adjourns the court, the judges will remain in place for an informal question and answer session.
All rise. Court stands adjourned until further order of the court.
Please be seated.